Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Really 007 podcast for yet another look into the extensive James Bond songbook, the back catalogue of Bond songs. And yes, there are still plenty left, trust us. You might not have heard of one of them we're going to do later, but it's still a Bond song, technically. So you can download all our episodes on iTunes and Spotify, as well as the video interviews and specials on our own YouTube channel. Just look up Really 007 and you should be able to find us fairly easily. And please do subscribe. Do rate and recommend us. 5-star, hopefully. And any positive reviews will be treasured. We have a reputation for rewarding loyalty. We're also on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And again, give us a follow and join in on the inane chat. Special shout out tonight to Chris Eales, also known as Big Red Trousers on social media. Thank you, Chris. You've been a great support to us, so appreciate that, mate. And yet again, we must say a special hello to one of our, well, all-time favourite listeners, big fans, Lorenzo Granger. Now, if you don't know Lorenzo, give him a follow. He is on Instagram and Facebook, and he's known as the Substitute Agent. Really good name, I think. Mm. Really good name. Yeah, he's a very positive Bond fan, and especially of the Brosnan era. So, yeah, he's a big fan of Brosnan. But unfortunately for him, we won't be discussing Brosnan tonight, other than hopefully it coming up in conversation. You know, it might do. You never know. But yes, anyway, tonight I am joined by my regular contributors, John Kell.
Hello.
Matthew Pickup.
Hello.
Christopher Goldie.
Hello.
And tonight we have a special guest, better known as one half of the Paul and Griff show. We have Paul Griffin.
How are we doing?
So I'll do the joke. Are you Paul or are you Griff in the title of the show?
I'm Griff, spoiler alert.
Yes. Yeah, great to have you on the show, Griff. And thank you very much for your really superb support of our podcast on social media. Thanks for listening in and helping us build an audience. We just mentioned there you do the Paul and Griff show. Could you just tell us a bit about the podcast that you guys do?
Yeah, basically me and my mate Paul. Yeah, we're both called Paul. So it's just easy to separate it to like Paul and Griff. Lifelong friends. I think when the pandemic all started, we were just chatting about films, playing PlayStation. We thought we'd just record us chatting about films and put on a podcast. We just do everything from randomly like Disney Channel musicals to Seven, anything really. We just love chatting about films and try and mix things up every now and then with different topics and different seasons and all around movie lovers, really.
You did started a series on the Bond films, but it was so funny. It was like 10 minutes, if that, wasn't it? Sort of like spelling out the plot of Dr. No and then From Rush with Love. But it was the driest sense of humour I've ever heard. It was superb. Absolutely brilliant. So,
like a love project, really. And Goldfinger will come out at some point. Yeah. I think added pressure that it's got to get right. But yeah, it was kind of from the perspective of Bond, and he has to describe the film from his point of view in 7 minutes or less, hence Operation 007 minutes.
Yeah.
Just like came up with, just a bit of fun and yeah.
It's really, really funny because it's like but a fly on the wall take as if Bond is going through the motions and almost like he's writing a postcard back to Moneypenny. That's how it's sort of, it's really good. So yeah, guys, do listeners, please subscribe to the Paul and Griff Show. It's superb, really good listen, and good set of lads with some really interesting debates on there as well, and chats about lots of different types of films, not just Bond. Griff, in terms of you and James Bond growing up, did you first see them as a child, I assume?
Yeah, like I used to go around my granddad's house, and I think my love of films came from going to his house and have loads of videos. Like some of the films we shouldn't have seen as probably kids. Most of the time we're watching Die Hard or like Rambo. And
good lad.
And most of the time it was Bond as well. Mainly Goldfinger, Live and Let Die, and Man with the Golden Gun were like the three that kind of always went in. And I just loved it. I think through the gadgets, I think as a kid, you just take the Bond of gadgets. And as you get older, you just appreciate the films more and more. I remember buying them all on video. I know like you guys are massive License to Kill fans. I think that's probably one of the last films I got to see because we weren't allowed to watch that as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So to actually watch that, I was like, oh, I'm old enough to watch License to Kill. I do blame Bond for my fear of sharks because I never watched Jaws as a kid, but I'm absolutely petrified of sharks, and it is all because of Bond and probably Spy Who Loved Me, Live and Let Die. License to Kill didn't help. Thunderball, which we're going to talk about. But yeah, petrified of them, all because of Bond and not Jaws.
That's so good. So, did you watch them on TV as well and sort of get them recorded?
Yeah, I did the recording and all that. It's not a bank holiday without a Bond film. Sometimes I look and see there's nothing on ITV on a bank holiday Monday and I feel this is wrong. Like, bank holiday Monday or Boxing Day, a Bond film should go on. Record them all through the adverts and the editing. I'm hoping with, obviously, Amazon buying MGM, they go to a streaming service for, like, a new audience. Because I think it's dying for, like, new people to get into Bond.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you go to the cinema, not a lot of people actually watch, like, ITV4, which tends to be on at the moment. So I'm hoping it's actually going to be on Prime for people to start watching and grabbing new audiences. But, yeah, I had them all on cassette at the end and then upgrade to DVD and upgrade to Blu-ray and one day I may upgrade to 4K. I need a 4K TV first.
Are they out yet on 4K? I should know this, shouldn't I?
I think only the individual. I think possibly Spectre when it came out. I don't think you can get the box set 4K yet, but I'm sure there's probably plans for them.
Yeah, and it'll be 60 years anniversary, won't it, in 2022, so I'm sure there'll be loads of tie-ins with that, but yeah. Superb, Griff, yeah. When you were growing up, you mentioned those films. So apart from Goldfinger, they're all sort of Roger Moore, easier sort of watch films. Who was your favourite Bond growing up?
Oh, Connery.
Oh, good.
Yeah, great stuff.
Great in Connery. It sounds, even though nobody does it better, it should have been for him.
yeah.
Really, I just think he was Bond. But I know, obviously, you do take to, like, the original Bond, and he just had, right, a charisma about him, and Roger Moore's probably like close second, mainly for how many films he did and growing up and the nostalgia purposes of it. But yeah. Sean Connery, for me, is Bond. And I think Thunderball was his elements, his charisma. And just massive fan of Connery. I'm a massive fan of all of them, really, even though I think some of your latest episodes have made me question Daniel Craig more than...
Yeah, you've been listening. Good lad.
I do listen, and I did really like Casino Royale, and you've given me a lot to think about. Like, do I actually enjoy Casino Royale as a film, or do I enjoy it as a Bond film? Which I think I'm actually having a crisis thinking about.
Oh no, that wasn't our intention, Griff.
Yeah,
no, it wasn't. But it's a good argument. It's a good argument to see. Like, is it a good film, or is it a Bond film?
I think we best just put a disclaimer in that, just for the sake of our listeners, our mission is not to brainwash people against that.
No.
It's... And, you know, more proof, we have Craig fans on the show, so... You know. No, it is. It's very odd, isn't it? Because we were a bit older when that came out and you've already got those preconceived ideas of what you want in a Bond film, it can't quite be the same as when you say, yeah, when you watch Living Let Die for the first time just on your TV as kids, it's totally different. Which, so was Brosnan, was he the Bond when you were growing up then? Was he the Bond in the cinema?
First Bond cinema. Even though I loved GoldenEye, I don't think I saw it at the cinema. I think The World Is Not Enough was probably the first film I saw at the cinema.
John, yeah.
And I think that's Brosnan's best movie.
Oh, right.
Come on, man.
She's getting better, this girl.
I definitely think it's an argument for the best opening scene, opening segment. And I always remember, obviously, you guys all like my age, the little Easter egg. There used to be a traffic warden TV show.
Yeah.
On TV. And when obviously the boat soaks the traffic warden, like he got a little cameo in the movie.
Yeah.
And I just love the fact that we had the whole Millennium Dome and it kind of all captured all that in the opening. And yeah, that was my first cinema experience. And then unfortunately, Die Another Day didn't high.
No, please carry on about Dying of the Day.
It was okay. It's just a bit insane. I think it was just, I don't think it's aged very well, even though it's only been, 10, 15 years?
20.
20 next year.
We're getting on, aren't we? We're getting old.
We're getting old, yeah.
But yeah, World Is Not Enough is probably the first cinema trip.
You're from London, though, aren't you, Griff? So it must have been quite good to see a lot of London in The World Is Not Enough and then in Skyfall.
Yeah, it's great to see the scenes and looking forward to hopefully seeing the new one, which I'll probably see in London as well. I'd like to go to the IMAX in London, which is pretty cool. And I always remember, I think for Skyfall, the BFI IMAX, just the massive bond round the, that was,
yeah,
even not seeing the film, that's just cool to like brilliant. Take a photo with that in the background.
Yeah. It does make it such an event, doesn't it?
You know?
I love it. And, you know, really hope that it can happen for No Time to Die. And we as a podcast team can see it together.
Yeah, well, it will be odd. Just going to see it together will be really, it'll be great fun. But even just going to the cinema, you know, it's not been done for an awful lot, has it, recently? So that'll be something.
Mm.
You know, you said before, like, it would be great if they were all on Netflix available. It's still good to have the new ones at the cinema. I would have thought you'd think that.
Yeah. I don't agree with all the buying to watch it at home, like... Disney are kind of going towards that angle. A Bond film needs to be seen on the big screen.
Absolutely.
For the first time anyway. So
Yeah. Did you say your favourite Bond film is Goldfinger? Is that right?
Yeah, Goldfinger. I just can't fault it. I think when the sad news of Sean Connery passing that night, Goldfinger had to go on.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
It's just only fitting. And I think that's where, obviously, going for the budgets and all that, Bond really took off. I know from Russian with Love and Doctor No were successes, but Goldfinger was massive and actually probably paid for Thunderball with how much money it made. But yeah, Goldfinger. And for me, 40th birthday next year, rented out a cinema in London to kind of show Goldfinger to some family and friends.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Black tie event. People can't turn up in fancy dress. It's that's a 40th birthday thing. So that'd be cool.
That is awesome.
Come on down, I'll get you on the invite list.
Oh, well, I was going to say Griff, but I thought it was a bit cheeky. definitely, yeah. I know a few of them have been shown, haven't they? Is it the Prince Charles in London? I know quite a few of the Bond Twitter community have been going to those.
Before the first pandemic, Odeon was, when No Time to Die was coming out, you actually vote on what film you wanted to see on the big screen, and then COVID hit. And it kind of put it all to bed. So Odeon was going to show whatever you voted for the most on the big screen as a lead up to No Time to Die. But yeah, COVID ruins everything.
Because it's a bit far for us to go there, unfortunately.
People voting for Pierce Brosnan films, but I'm just like, even though they're good, like an excuse to see Thunderball, any of the Roger Moores or any of that on the big screen. That in our lifetime, like obviously too young to watch like License to Kill on the big screen or any of that backwards.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So would you say that if you could watch any Bond film on the big screen, it would be Goldfinger?
Goldfinger would be the experience. With second would probably I did watch Live and Let Die a head of a lot as a kid. Mm. So Live and Let Die would probably be a lot of fun to watch on the big screen.
If only for J.W. Pepper. Are you a fan of the man?
Yeah, I know, like, he probably hasn't aged well for new audiences. No, no. But when you grew up, you just take it as it is. Obviously, yeah, now looking back, like, how'd they get away with that? But the world was a different time back then. The world was a different time, and I think he's quite funny. He's quite a character. And he makes it, like, whether he's probably worse in Man with the Golden Gun, politically. it was nice to see a returning character. I don't know if it's like one of the first time, if it's not Felix Leiter, a recurring character.
Yeah. You've got Sylvia movies. Trench.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The first proper big character. Major character.
The first true ally.
Yeah.
He's not an ally in Live and Let Die. Well, I keep saying that, but anyway.
But the sheriff wanted to appear on the front cover of our Best Allies episode, so he was doctored in. But over Mathis's head. That's nothing to do with us. We did not decide that. That was J. Dewey Pepper himself who did that. Anyway, shout out to J. Dewey Pepper. I'm sure we'll be seeing you soon, mate. Yeah.
So you're listening to the Really 007 podcast. My name is Lee Sheward, and I'm a film and television stuntman, second unit director, and stunt coordinator.
We will go on to the reason we're here for our sixth volume of James Bond's songs. And tonight we're focusing on the songs of Thunderball, because it was the first Bond film to have more than one original song in terms of, you know, written by the composer. I know Dr. No had a lot of the island music on it, but songs specifically written for the film. So we had Thunderball, of course, the title track, and we had Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is almost like a forgotten belter, I'd refer to it as. It's known, you can hum along to it, people will probably instantly recognise it, but the actual song is a bit less well known. But hopefully, after we've been discussing it tonight, we'll get a bit more famous, maybe, who knows. But yes, Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's easy to forget that it's only John Barry's third Bond score. It's one of his classic scores, I'd say, but it's only his third, because, of course, like we said, Dr. No, he came in to arrange the theme, but it was Monty Norman's score itself. By now, he's taking it all in his stride. He's completely in command of the music. He knows exactly what's needed. He's tailoring the themes to the plot, to characters. It's the first time that, as I say, he wrote two separate songs for the same film. Now, the original title song was to be this. It was to be Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And does anyone know where that phrase comes from? Oh, Griff's got his hand up. There we go. Go on.
Was it nicknamed the Italian media? Nicknamed
yes,
Bond?
Apparently so, yeah.
That's a point. Come on.
Sadly, we don't do the quizzes. For
right. Anymore, we're not doing a quiz tonight, Griff. Come on.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is true. I think in 1962, some Italian journalist, yeah. It's a really good... I don't know whether it was in Italian, but it works brilliantly, doesn't it?
Mm.
I love that phrase. The lyricist was Leslie Bricus, who had done the lyrics for Goldfinger, and then he went on to do You Only Live Twice. And I'm sure you know that he also did the words for the musicals Dr. Doolittle, not Rob's favourite, not the with Robert Downey Jr. being completely depressive with a weird Welsh accent, not that one. Not the Eddie Murphy one either, no. was it Rex Harrison, wasn't it? The original, yeah. Because it was a musical. Talks about if I could talk to the animals and all this.
Have you seen the video of Roger Moore doing that? So there is on a TV show in, let's say, mid-80s, Roger Moore on a kids' TV show does the Dr. Doolittle, If I Could Talk to the Animals, with like puppet animals, similar to, say, Sesame Street. Things go around. I'll send you a link out after. You can put it on Twitter. That is a genuine fact.
There's so many links with everything, isn't there, with Bond? It's crazy. What is going on? Oh, Sesame Street. Is it still going? I don't know. It's so Christmas, all these amazing people just in on the fun. But yeah, we will definitely promote that. So anyway, yes, Leslie Bricus also did the lyrics for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Again, not the Johnny Depp one, the Gene Wilder one, with, Pure Imagination and Oompa Loompa and other terrifying songs like that. Terrifying film. But yeah, brilliant. Brilliant. Another Bond connection. He did the lyrics for the musical version of Scrooge with Albert Finney.
Oh.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So good.
That's a terrifying film. Blimey.
It is, yeah, yeah. Again, as kids, these are the films that when you watch horror, like, no, it's not that bad, actually. Yeah, when he's that final scene when he's, you know, he's, it's almost like he's in hell, isn't it? With the, you know, in the Grim Reaper, and oh dear, the Ghost of Christmas Future, dear, dear. So yes, John, Leslie Bricus also did the lyrics to an absolutely breathtaking family film, 1991. It was, yeah, you lent me the soundtrack, I remember, and it's, I've been playing it ever since. And I didn't realise, I saw it recently, that there were a couple of songs in it. But can you remember what it was? It was...
So the album will be Hook.
Yes.
Which is one of the greatest albums of all time, soundtracks. Did Leslie, did he write When You're Alone?
Yes.
The stars are all my friends. Oh, what a tune.
Honestly, listen to that, people. It's just... Yeah. They don't make them like they used to.
This should have been... I know we're supposed to be talking about Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but we can talk about Hook for instead if you want.
Can't wait, yeah. You're Oscar nominated as well, that song. But again, you'll never hear it played. Or absolutely beautiful.
What a song.
Did he... I think he might have done the lyrics to the Home Alone as well. The, you know, somewhere in my memory, actually. I'm pretty sure he did. Which is another absolute classic. So, yeah. Anyway, yes, he did the lyrics to Miss Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. That's what we're talking about. So, yeah. Babyishly, the song was originally recorded by Shirley Bassey. Yeah, it was realised late in the day that the track apparently was too short for the titles, you know, the title sequence. I mean, this wouldn't happen nowadays, this kind of problem, would it? But Bassey, though, was unavailable at the last minute to change it. So they got Dionne Warwick to record it, and it had a more of a longer instrumental introduction so that it would fit the length of the titles. They also didn't want the lyrics to be heard until after the title Thunderball had appeared in Maurice Binder's design. So the only time we heard that as children, again, was the... Can you remember that James Bond 30th anniversary CD? I don't know whether if anyone had that. Apparently that's the first time it actually was officially released on that CD.
Yeah.
The Dionne Warwick version.
Is that the one that you played when you got your Sega Saturn? And you played...
I did, yeah.
You played it, you know, you just played that. Repeat. I mean, we did play some games as well, Daytona and Hands of Dragoon. Hands of Dragoon. You played that album, and I think that was like the first time I'd, you know, properly heard it, and it's like, what's this from?
It is incredible. And I think it was, we didn't have a CD player other than that, so we used the Saturn as the CD player. Yeah, great, great song. Yeah. And it was in the same order, you know, it wasn't in order of release at that point. It was almost like most famous. So it probably started with Goldfinger, I think. And then it might have been Live and Let Die, and then Nobody Does It Better. And yeah, absolutely incredible. Yeah, so there's a bit of a weird background song. Yeah, so it was the 1990s when it was first included on that CD. But in terms of this song, Cubby Broccoli and Harry Saltzman were worried that if there was the theme song to a James Bond film, didn't have the title in its lyrics, then it might not be able to sell the film as well. So they thought, can you write one with the word Thunderball in, please? And that was done fairly last minute. We'll come on to that song later. When Saltzman left for Spy Love Me, Cubby obviously had changed his mind by then, hadn't he? Because they didn't. Nobody Does It Better for the Spy Love Me, all-time high for Octopussy. And then now, you know, we've had quite a few, haven't we? You Know My Name, obviously, for Casino Royale, and Writings on the Wall for Spectre. So, yeah, it's not seen as absolutely crucial these days. But, yes, the Warwick version was meant to be used at the end titles, and then Shirley Bassey got wind of this, and she actually sued the producers. because she was like, well, hang on, I was meant to do that. That was meant to be my song for the film. I don't really want somebody else singing it just because I wasn't available on that day. So that meant that neither version ended up in the film. So that's why you don't get the actual song in the film. You get the instrumental. But yeah, it's quite, it's annoying, these quirks. But Chris, where would you have had it as the title song, or would you have had it at the end credits maybe, or something like that?
Yeah, I can sort of see, you know, the reason, the rationale behind them kind of wanting to have the theme song be actually have the title of the film. I completely understand that. But what just goes to show the quality and the talent involved that you can write Mr. Kiss Bang Bang, go, it's not going to fit. Go on, crack out another one, which is Thunderbolt. Like, God, yeah. Grief. It's like another one that's just amazing. It's just that pool of talent, you know, and Barry just, you know, being the best, you know, at the time, it just is remarkable. I think I think it's a brilliant song. I absolutely love it. I love that you get it. And for me, Thunderball is, the score is where Barry, you know, I love Goldfinger and particularly the score and stuff. And, you know, the little, that little sort of, the dun, 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 the sneaker pinks.
Yes.
Pimps, yeah.
Sample. So for me, Goldfinger's score is brilliant. You know, the intro to Miami, it's just amazing. Yeah. Like, 30 seconds long? It's like, this is amazing. But for me, Thunderball is like prime. This is where Barry is getting it. This is where Barry is, you know, writing, you know, kind of including all these motifs, you know, and the use of music from Tension to, you know, this really lush sort of jazz lounge version, like, you know, Cafe, which one is it? Cafe
Martinique.
Yeah.
Cafe Martinique, and yeah.
It's just goes to show what a superb composer and arranger he was. Yeah. That he, again, this is the start of that weaving themes through. But to have, but for, I think, to be honest with you, I think Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is probably, I think it's actually catchier than Thunderball, but I understand why it wasn't included. It's a fantastic title. It's a great song. But I totally get why they went with Thunderball, because, and to have Tom Jones, you know, belting that out, you know, it's just, I say, it's just to say, we're not happy with that. It's not working, to then write something that is just as amazing. I think it's just fantastic.
Griffin, did you know the song fairly well, or
didn't really? But when you hear it, you feel like you've heard it before, obviously because the little background music's in Thunderball.
Yeah,
and I think that helps it like be a little bit pick up. I think it has been on one of the CDs. I don't think I had the 30th anniversary, but I think it's one of those things where I've heard it and I've usually would skip it like halfway through, like, oh, I don't know that song. Was that randomly in there?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, when you listen to the lyrics and all that, it's pretty clever. It's very catchy. And I say, probably as catchy as Thunderball as a song. Not as powerful, but it's still, as I say, it feels like you've heard it before, probably because the background music is in Thunderball.
And it's about James Bond, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, before Nobody Does It Better, I know it was about time to write a song about him, but it had been done. And that's why I always see it as, this is Sean Connery's song. This is the song for him, about him. Matthew, big fan of this song, hopefully.
Nah. No, it's absolutely, it's brilliant. Yeah, so like I say, that 30th anniversary, I don't, you know, I haven't been aware of it before, but yeah, just amazing. You know, the fact that you can have a second song, or you can write two songs for the same film that are this good, that, you know, it's not a musical here. This is a spy action adventure. I just think it's incredible. And it makes me long for those days where there's a long-standing relationship between, you know, the Bond producers and the composer. And so, you know, I think they had that almost to an extent with David Arnold, but not quite to this extent with John Barry,
no.
You know, writing more than one song. you know, with brilliant melodies that can be woven into the score. It's just brilliant. And yeah, I really like this. You know, I like it performed as a song as well by Dionne Warwick. I think it really works. I really like the fact that the two songs have, you know, one a female voice, one a male voice. That helps to, you know, I don't know, just give that variety. And the way that it's, yeah, like I say, the way that the melody of Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is in the score is absolutely beautiful. And, you know, as Chris says, the score is absolutely wonderful to this film and just makes it such an incredible, I don't know, I think it really adds to it.
Yeah. They're quite similar lyrically, aren't they? That it's not quite similar. You're talking about the character and very much like...
Yeah, they are, yeah.
What the, you know, being these kind of tall, dark strangers and, you know.
Yeah. I think that one of the reasons why it does that is because we're just hitting bomb mania. So we've had Goldfinger, which was, you know, obviously about the villain, and that's taken off. And it's clever to then go, we'll write the main song about James Bond because it's James Bond that everybody's obsessed with. And it works brilliantly. The Dionne Warwick version is, for me personally, infinitely better than the Shirley Bassey one. I think the Dionne Warwick one is absolutely sensational. I think
the arrangement.
The arrangement, and I think it's possibly a couple of keys higher because her voice cuts through far better than Shirley Bassey's does on it. I adore that. And if that was at the end of the song. Oh my word! At the end of the film, that would be sensational, wouldn't it? It'd be nearly as good as *License to Kill*. And if you asked me to, wouldn't it?
If it was a man.
But that long intro to *Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang*.
Yeah,
absolutely beautiful.
I'd love
for that to sort of return. I think it's just wonderful.
Yeah, there's not that, and that's why. I think there's that, particularly during that period, where with Connery and with Barry's score, and you see that in Majesty's Secret Service and to a certain extent in Diamonds Are Forever, is that lush jazz sound where you go from, it's the action, and he's able to do the action song and then turn it into, and that's obviously his background, wasn't it? Obviously he's a jazz composer. Was to be able to do that, and you just don't get that anymore. You don't. And that's one thing, and I'm not working all with kind of words of you know, complaining about, you know, Daniel Craig or anything. But the one thing that I
did to do with him, you know,
one thing I
did, not a composer.
Modern Bond films is that ability where it elevates it to something classy and elegant, and I think that when people think of Connery, you think of elegance, you think of him. You know, the way he moves and just the way he's able to sort of, and the sets and everything, there's that. It counteracts with the brutality of him, you know, obviously being able to fight and, you know, and kill people and all the action kind of stuff. But there's that sort of, that two sides for me of Bond. I think John Barry was just the perfect composer. He's able to capture drama and action. And then that, as soon as he walks into a casino or walks, you know, onto the beach, that score comes up and it's just like, it's just heaven.
Yeah, I agree. I'm one of the people on here who's previously controversially said that I'm not massively into having the Bond theme blasting out all the time in a score. Yeah, I'm happy for it a couple of times. But one of the reasons why that is because Barry is the master of creating such a memorable score without excessively using the Bond theme. And Thunderball, for me, throughout the Connery era, it's the best soundtrack. And why I feel that is because you've got the bits with the actual Thunderball score, you've got the Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and you've got the sound of water. You know, and you know when that's going on, you just know, I'm watching Thunderball and I've got an underwater scene.
Yeah.
That is the sound of water. And whilst Goldfinger, whilst Russia with Love, whilst You're Only the Twat, brilliant pieces of music. I think this one puts images of Thunderball in your head when you hear that bit of music.
Absolutely.
And that is
that is genius. That is absolute genius to do that. There's very few composers who do that for me. Mm. There's Barry, there's John Williams. He does it just as well. And in fact, they're the only two. I know a lot of people love Zimmer, and I love Zimmer. And whilst Dark Knight stuff, absolutely, I hear a piece of music and go, oh, that's that scene. A lot of it, I listen to a piece of music and go, that's amazing. But it doesn't give me an image like Barry or John Williams did, which was just unbelievable. Mm.
And then to you, like, what's the was Death of Fiona, which is that the bongo, yeah, which just slowly builds up, and it goes back into the jazz kind of.
Oh, no.
Oh. He's I think this is this the best relationship between a composer and the actual subject? I think I can't think of another composer.
I was trying to think
to add.
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of relationship between composers and film series because, like I say, you know, just Barry at this stage, you know, he's so key to the whole thing. Mm. I was thinking John Williams and Star Wars, but maybe, you know, obviously
they
weren't necessarily songs. I know you might say there are a couple of songs in the...
Papa Lazari,
though. Yeah. So I think that, and you know, Williams and Raiders of the Lost Ark. But I don't think it happens as much anymore. That's why I was really pleased that, you know, Hans Zimmer. I know James Newton Howard was in the first two, but Hans Zimmer was there for the whole Dark Knight trilogy. Like for the Marvel films, they don't always, you know, I know there's 20 odd, however many, but even within the same character, they aren't always able, or they don't choose to bring the same one back. So I just think it's brilliant to have that relationship, you know. And John Williams did he do the first couple of Harry Potters, and then, you know, it changed and everything. But this is just so, his music is just part and parcel of everything that made Bond wonderful.
And people have just tried to copy, haven't they? Not a copy, but it's a blueprint. I know David Arnold will admit that, won't he? You know, it's the blueprint that he wants to. Partly because the audience demands it, though, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's no coincidence that David Arnold is the second most popular Bond composer, because he basically is inspired by Barry, because Barry is the sound of Bond. Mm. That's the way it is. And I don't want to get into a ragging session, but that's why the Thomas Newman things don't work, because they're not the sound of Bond. They're trying to create beats, and they're trying to fit the film, which I understand in a sense, but the film should actually fit the theme. This is a Bond film, so therefore you should be creating scores that are Bondian. Yeah. That's my personal opinion anyway.
The intro to the instrumental of the Dionne Warwick version of Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, it merges into the Bond theme. It's like...
Yeah.
I can't believe how good. I think you've got to say it's not fair. No one is ever going to be able to be this good.
Yeah.
To give everyone a chance and not put so much pressure on.
I agree, but I would, you know, it's just such a broken record. But I would like the production and everything is bigger, and and the whole thing. The Bond vehicle is bigger than the director and the individual elements. So, absolutely. You know, say you get Sam Mendes on board, you say, yeah, but you keep David Arnold, and David will be, he'll be co-writing the theme song with person, you know, that's non-negotiable. Sorry, I'm really sounding like Alan Partridge in this time.
it's a non-negotiable.
Not a deal breaker.
But I you know, you can't imagine back then, you know, I don't know. Terence Young, Lewis Gilbert comes in. Yeah. Sorry, Albert and Harry. I'm having Maurice Jarre or so. You know, no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? John Barry's as much a crucial piece of the jigsaw as anyone else.
It was definitely him, wasn't it? So every time the directors changed, he would be there, wouldn't he? And even like, with John Glenn, he started off Few Eyes Only. John Barry wasn't available, so held Bill Conti. But, well, obviously, if John's free, the next one, of course, it's him. And it was until License to Kill. And to be fair, as long as he was alive and wanting to do them, he was always first choice. until I think Goldeneye wasn't available, and then he just sort of said he gave his blessing, didn't he, to David Arnold for Tomorrow Never Dies. But there is no equivalent. There's no point sort of trying to. Try something new, or do you just try and ape Barry as much? That's the question. I think it's quite a difficult balance.
Yeah, I would be tempted to lean into just trying to copy. You know, like Michael. What's the composer?
Giacchino.
Lost.
Yeah,
Invincibles.
Incredibles.
Yeah, Michael Giacchino. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the closest. Obviously, he wanted John Barry, didn't he?
Yeah.
But that's the closest I've heard that Barry, like you say, as a copy. I would rather have just someone do that and let's just admit it, that he is as important to a Bond film as the gun barrel is. I know that's guessed recently, but you know what I mean? There are certain elements that make a Bond film. So therefore,
John Barry ass.
is this the new tribute band?
Yeah. How's your ass?
I can't even remember.
Sorry. Griff, you know, growing up when you were watching the films, were you like aware of the music and John Barry being involved at all?
No, I don't think I appreciate it as a kid. I think just watching it, and as you get older, you start taking all that kind of stuff in and all the sets. And
yeah,
I just think as a kid, you just want to see the gadgets and the stunts and him pull the women, and then just want to be Bond. But yeah, as you get older, you start taking all that in.
Yeah. Is that what you like in a, you know, is he a non, I can't speak now. Is it a non-negotiable to have like that kind of music and those kind of gadgets and the certain, I don't know, the uber villain and all that? Is that what you'd like in a Bond film, sort of as a given?
I think so. I get, because of, I think that the Dark Knight or Batman Begins, they tried to do this whole origin thing and tried to change. It was a no-win situation. Do you stick and then you say like, oh, you're just trying to copy the same formula, or do you change? You're never going to please everyone.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is a Bond film, and I obviously listened to you guys before. I completely agree. We don't need the Bond films to actually like be a universe, a storyline, one after the other, and especially like, oh, you know what? This actually explains the last three movies, and yeah, I'm not really a fan of that.
Yeah, I think with that, you know, if you're going to do it, then make sure you're doing it from the start. Don't try and, you know, retcon it.
Definitely a last minute, like, oh, let's just try and be clever and say, actually, I'm the mastermind behind all these three, and we won't even get into the whole, I'm your brother. Like, Goldmember took the mickey out of it in a movie, and all of a sudden they're like, you know what, we'll copy that idea.
Joking about Percy Wade and Mickey takes of Bond movies, I actually watched Johnny English for the first time in years the other day, and I absolutely loved the score of that. It was a deliberate mockery of Bond. It's a complete motif of it, but it's the most Bondian score I've heard since Casino Royale. That's the thing, you know.
I thought you were going to say since Leicester Killer. Sorry, no. No.
And it's just to highlight what Chris is saying about the same thing with Michael Giacchino, especially with the Cars 2. I mean, it's just when he's got the Aston Martin DB5 and Michael Caine's playing the car, it is Bond. And I know that people are doing it as a riff, and some people might say, yeah, but you want to do something new. Well, yeah, I get that, but do something new on what people love. Don't completely throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, yeah.
Just be inventive with that. And I love Arnold for that. That's why I like his beats in World Is Not Enough. I know not everyone's a fan of them, but it's got the beats, but it's still got the brass in it. It's still got the Bond theme coming on. It's just innovation. And, you know, that's that's what we want. Well, it's what I want. I shouldn't speak for the people. Sorry.
Can't do that, John. Sad again. Compare it to Fast and the Furious. I know it's got less and less about cars, but there are still cars in it. You know, it's not. They've not completely abandoned that.
It's all about family.
It's about family. About family.
I'll have a Corona, shake and not stir. There you go,
yeah. Oh. But yeah, that's if they. I suppose it depends on what are the keep saying it, the non-negotiables. Fast and Furious has to have the stunts, doesn't it? With the car, it wouldn't survive, would it, if it didn't have those? And Bond films, there's a lot more that you were meant to have in them. So before you even begun, you had to have so many elements. You had to have the glamorous locations, the women, the music, the villains, Bond on a mission, trying to get a plot, same Q, the gadgets, all this. So it is hard for sort of the auteurs to come in and sort of say, actually, I've got this idea for the film and I want to do that, go here with that. So I do sympathise where, in a world where we're meant to be trying to create more and more, actually, we're in a world where there's loads and loads of sequels, aren't there, at the moment? Mm-hmm. They're the main films that are drawing people in. So perhaps they will, after No Time to Die, go back to the more, you know, box-ticking James Bond, but I don't know.
Really 007 is part of the Pod Dojo Network.
Just in terms of something I was thinking, particularly when we're thinking about Thunderball, I think it's a really unique film, and I know the underwater scenes for some people, you know, they drag on, etc. But I think it makes it such a unique film because, you know, no other film has this amount of underwater scenes. It's pretty incredible. I don't count something like Aquaman or Deep Blue Sea where they are at.
Tiny Nemo.
But to have this, like, you know, a James Bond film where loads of it's underwater and you know, with the soundtrack being really crucial to that. But I was thinking, the Bond actors, we like to see them, you know, I think it's really nice to see a Bond actor underwater doing, you know, scuba.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
At least once in their tenure.
Yeah.
And we'll do an episode skiing. On Bond underwater.
And, you know, the skiing, yeah, that's another one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always nice to see in a naval commander's uniform as well. And I was thinking it'd be nice to see Daniel Craig's Bond, you know, doing some scuba or, you know, something like that. And also in the naval commander uniform. If it were me being in charge, I'd like to see those things just because they're very Bondian elements. I'm not saying you have them every single film by any means, but when you're Bond for a, you know, sustained period, it's nice to have those things.
But I think Thunderball as a film is very much, I think, more of a prime example of modern, the Bond film rather than the adaptation of Ian Fleming. Than Goldfinger is. Like, Goldfinger is seen as, oh, that's where it all started. And for some people see it as like a slippery slope with gadgets and all that sort of stuff. But I think Thunderball really obviously doubled down on that, you know, with the opening. You've got a rocket pack, you know, you've got the Aston Martin, you go back to those very exotic locations, you know, and I just think that for me it's massively underrated, Thunderball. I don't know if this is to do with, you know, a lot of people complain about the you know, the pacing, isn't it, you know, the fact it's a bit of a slump in the middle, whether that's to do with the fact that obviously he was originally written with Kevin McCrory as a screenplay and then turned into a book and then put back into you know, a screenplay again, whether that has sort of mixed things up a little bit. But I think it's up to then. Connery is at his most confident. He is, you know, his most comfortable in it. He completely owns it. He knows exactly what's expected of him, and you can see he's enjoying it. It has, the music is top notch. The cinematography, you know, the fact that you obviously got, you know, like Terence Young again to come back and you know, I just think it's so underrated, and it's such a shame because it's probably actually more fitting with today's kind of taste than maybe You Only Live Twice, which is much more kind of outlandish, you know, with its spaceships and things like that. And I don't understand why Thunderball isn't kind of, I'm kind of expecting a renaissance of love for Thunderball, because I think I think it's Connery's probably his best performance, or certainly his most enjoyable one. And the film itself is just, oh, it's just absolute class.
Yes, Chris. Do you like the film, Griff?
I do. I think everything that Chris said is pretty much spot on. I think the only weakness in Thunderball, I think, really is Largo. I just don't think he carries a great threat. But apart from that, the set design, the actual film, I don't think it's got pacing issues at all. And I think,
no.
I know, I think the underwater fight scene, I think like eight or 9 minutes, but nothing's ever been done on that level ever before. Mm. And I guess now people can say like it went on a little bit and that, but at the time, and I don't find it dull. I just find it great. I love the whole, oh, you know what, make Big Ben strike 11 times at 10 o'clock mm-hmm. yeah, to show. Yeah. It feels like a proper spy, and the actual plot and the actual story is probably one of the strongest going. Yeah. What do you call it? Doing plastic surgery to kind of take down a plane and going to nick the rockets. And I get it hasn't got the tongue-in-cheekness, apart from obviously him kind of passing her some like slippers when she wants to get out of the bath. And best scene in the movie.
Yeah,
and he knocks the he elbows the fire alarm when he's going.
That's
only
why
Connery
he
could do it.
Yeah, he's just so flipping.
But I think it's also up to that point. I think it's probably Bond at his most vulnerable. You know, you see him recovering from an injury. We've seen that in another film. You know, you see him. You know, he also gets shot, doesn't he? He gets shot in the car. There are moments of real peril where you think actually he's not going to be able to get out of that. You got a female kind of protagonist who's actually has something about her. You know, it for me, it feels like actually, if I was if I was at Eon, I'd be looking at something like Goldfinger, because that seems like a real kind of, not a compromise, but a real balance of spy stories. This is about a spy, so we need to have a bit of intrigue and, you know, espionage, but also action and a slightly kind of, not outlandish, but just pushing it in terms of it being, you know, something you've not seen before. You know, and I think that for me, of all of them, I would be using that as a blueprint for the next Bond film.
And I also think that having got the rights back to Spectre, I think this would have been a really good blueprint in terms of, and Griff, I understand what you're saying about Largo. I think if he didn't have the white hair and patch, you wouldn't really possibly remember him that much in terms of what he does. But I really like the idea. Spectre are the villains behind this, but you don't know much. You know, you get that group scene. Blofeld's there, but you don't see. Yes. Incredible. Oh, lovely. But the main villain is number two. You know, it's not Blofeld. So I would have liked to have seen that in something like Spectre. And, you know, I think you get an element of that in Casino Royale and, you know, a little bit with Quantum of Solace, that there's this organization in the background, but these aren't the main people in the organization, but these are sort of key sort of people within it. And I think that with Spectre, they could have been more open about Spectre and had, you know, maybe Blofeld there, but you know, I don't know, but then had a number two as the main villain for it, you know. And, you know, it could have been someone like Monica Bellucci, or it could have been, you know, a different actor or something like that. One thing I do love about that Largo does and is when the guy gets executed, you know, electrocuted, and he just nonchalantly just carries on sort of writing and checks his pencil and stuff. I think that's brilliant.
That must have happened before, right? I don't know why one of them wouldn't stand up if, you know, they've been dodgy dealing. If you know you've done the dirty, I don't get why you just sit there waiting to die. That's a completely first surprise. And
I've said it before, I think. Sorry to bore everyone, but I think this Thunderball is the most replicated. So, like, Austin Powers steals so much off Thunderball because I think it's what, maybe not the most diehard Bond fans, but casual Bond fans will think of when they think of Bond.
Yeah.
Of Goldfinger as well, I think. But they'll think of, from that, the Aston Martin, the jetpack. I mean, we've named so many things. They'll think of the sharks.
Pool of sharks,
Number two, exactly. It's all... Well, they obviously with Will Ferrell and stuff, they did the scene, didn't they? The Spectre electrocution scene.
Yeah, also, Femme Fatale, you get one of the best ever in the series, you know.
Absolutely.
Freya Forbissinger. Yeah.
I was talking about
Volpe.
Fiona and Volpe,
But yeah, even the plot is obviously, you know, hell, let's do what we always do and steal two nuclear warheads.
Yeah.
It is. It's just, it's brilliant. It got quite excited then when you talk about that, Matt. If you had Inspector, as you could have had Christoph Waltz lurking in the background as Blofeld, because he isn't in it much anyway, is he? He's only in it in the last half an hour.
No.
If you'd have had that and then, yeah, Monica Bellucci or another villain who would have been disposed of by the end of this film. But because they had all the CCTV and data protection and all that stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could say that C is in some way, but no, he's not.
Yeah,
enough.
But
he's not enough.
Tapped on as a, he didn't work fund. Was he just
being he says in it, C, I assume he's one of yours. I don't know how he knows that he's called C, but isn't that on the docs? It was a nickname. But yeah, and then he says, yeah, he's like me, he's a visionary or something like that. Or I can't remember.
Yeah, that's what he says.
But yeah, I don't know. I, you know,
all along.
Yeah. I, you know, who am I? But that's the sort of thing I would have done. And you know, I just think they got so fixated on the whole Blofeld thing, and then Brofeld, you know.
Again, there's no consideration. There's no thought. They got hold of it. The rights were clear. It's like, how can we get this in? No moments pause to go, actually, if it was me, I'd be like, how can I milk this? How can I set this up for the next one?
Yeah,
We're going to peak too soon. And it's like, well, there's Blofeld. What are we going to do with him? And it ends with him being pretty pathetic, doesn't he? He's like, he sprained his ankle and he's like, and then he's arrested. And I just think that it's that lack of thought that I find really frustrating. And that, you know, that like saying, it's like, oh, let's just kind of shoehorn this in. And there's so much potential to do. And I think, if it was me, I'd definitely be looking at
Thunderball, a film like Thunderball, as a blueprint.
Hmm.
They never mention it, though, do they? People never say, oh, it's one of the go-to Bonds. They'd sort of just about managed to persuade Sam Mendes back, just about managed to persuade Daniel Craig back. So how can they possibly create a thread for the next three or four films? And not, because there's the pace that they're coming at as well.
Mm.
It would have perhaps been worth starting Spectre with a new Bond, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and just continuing with Quantum.
And you can do
a good job of actually. Yeah. I feel.
Yeah, with, yeah know, Quantum's done really well. Like,
yeah.
There you go. Positive. Anyway, coming back to the music of the film Thunderball, because I said Thunderball, the song was sort of written last minute almost. Leslie Bricusse didn't even do the lyrics. He got Don Black in. I think this is the first one he produced the lyrics for, but he went on to do, I think he did five in the end, and he did the World Is Not Enough lyrics. So what an incredible run from 1965 to 1999. Still going strong as well. Still here with us. Good lad. I think he won an award, a Legends Award, didn't he? Was it the Olivia's or some award ceremony I saw with Andrew Lloyd Webber last year. So he's still there, yeah. And of course, this is the one, Tom Jones. Again, how famous is this song outside Bond? I don't know. Is it played on the radio very often?
No, it's certainly not given like the airplay that say Goldfinger is.
No,
and for me, I think it's a much better song than Goldfinger. I really, really? Do. Yeah, I think it's a better version of the same song. To be honest, I think it's got that power ballad. It's got that brass about it. But I think it's a better song, and I think the final note that he holds is it. Is it something silly like 30 seconds or something?
I think it's about
30 seconds TJ holds it for, and you just think to yourself, like,
really?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. Who'd have thought that, you know, 60 years later, he'd be there as a judge on The Voice?
I want you on my team. I thought you were going to say, who'd have thought 6 years later, Sam Smith was holding on that note, you know, the writing's on the wall. Rhymes with Thunderball as well.
Do you think if 50 years later we're going to see Sam Smith on the new version of The Voice?
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't either.
Was it Thunderball where did Johnny Cash
yes
suggest or put forward something?
Yeah. Yeah, he did, yeah.
Wow.
Put it forward, was that ever heard?
It's been released, the Johnny Cash version.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they think they said it actually laid out the plot too much.
Oh, right.
And it gives away the ending.
It's very country and western. It's okay if Eastwood was Bond.
It was considered, wasn't it? It's one of these, you know, ridiculous stuff. But again, it's not. It's he's written it, hasn't he? It's not a John Barry song. So
yeah,
it's nice of him to think of it. And he's. It's always great to hear people want to do a Bond song. I really like that.
Yeah,
and he's obviously a very talented legend, isn't he? So he did release it just on one of his albums, is that right, Griff?
Yeah, one of his albums. I think it was definitely Red Light. It was rejected because it was quite close. It says, I did write all the lyrics down. It's been really sad.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, let's hear it.
The way I read it is like, I think he thought Thunderball was the plane that goes down. Like, the power of her engines now is drowned at sea, but the deadly force from within her is somewhere running free, which is obviously the rockets being like stolen. I think if you're in the cinema, I'm not gonna put two together and be like, oh, I know the whole plot.
No.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
They just sung me the whole plot.
Oh, to be honest, Griff, so far I'm absolutely hooked on this. I mean, this is
it is good lyrics.
It's like Ring of Fire territory, you know.
it's got that kind of beat to it. Somewhere there is a man who can stop the thing in time. He's known by very fear, but he is feared by all in crime. It's very all about Bond, and but they didn't reject it because of how it sounds. I think I read that they rejected it because it pretty much laid out the plot too.
Mm. Not because it's a country western song.
I mean, without going on an absolute downer, because I have kept very quiet whilst you've all been waxing lyrical about Thunderball. But if I had one criticism of the film, and listen, it's got many, many positives. Great performance, wonderful set, wonderful locations, great soundtrack. Fiona Volpe is probably the best femme fatale in the whole of the series. But if there was one issue I had with it, was that it would be that your Bond is catching up with you as the audience all the way through. You see what is happening. You know that the bonds have been taken. That's told to you in the first 20, 30 minutes. You know that it's based in Miami. And the rest of the film is based in the Bahamas and going to aim for Miami. The rest of the film is Bond catching up to find what you already know. So when I find it quite bizarre that the criticism of that song is it tells too much of the plot. When the film told you the whole plot in the first 10 minutes alone. You know, it's like, come on. But anyway, that's enough for Thunderball.
Because
I do genuinely love the film. It's a great film. But that would be my one criticism of it.
Yeah.
To be fair, as a kid, I thought the song was about Thunderball. I thought Thunderball was the baddie.
I thought
I thought
it was all about Largo.
I thought it was called Largo Thunderball or something like Goldfinger. I just assumed that...
Yeah.
Largo's surname in fact, Thunderball. In fact, the song was about him.
I asked you, Tom. I said, "Who's this song? You know, is this song? Who's this song about? Is it about Largo?" it's about Bond. Like it's about Bond, obviously. Yeah.
Can you imagine it? Oh, Largo!
yeah, Largo means slow, of course.
He's the man on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Oh.
But then you could say, do you think Thunderball's about the rocket? So then it's like Moonraker, isn't it?
Moonraker.
Yeah. A ballad about a rocket. Two of them in the bombs. Yes.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Don Black wrote the lyrics to Thunderball, the actual title song. And this is what the famous story is, isn't it, when they're recording it. Tom Jones fainted, didn't he, for that final 30-second note. And this is what he said. He said, "I closed my eyes and I held the note for so long. When I opened my eyes, the room was spinning." You can almost hear the point
where it
ends, doesn't it? It doesn't end naturally. Oh. But I'm so glad they kept that take.
Yeah. And then the way the, you know, it continues to, the orchestra continues to take it. It's such an epic ending. Oh, it's
unbelievable.
Fabulous.
And of course, to say again, it was spoofed magnificently by...
Spy Hard.
Yeah. Weird Al Yankovic.
His head explodes.
Yeah. All the underwater, the women.
Milton Crash.
Yeah.
And the last, this is the theme from Spy Hard.
Yeah.
Incredible long note. And then instead of him, Faith, his head explodes. Absolutely brilliant. That's a great film.
Us watching that as kids, just crying, laughing the whole way through.
I mean, the song's actually, what's it called? Well, it's just called Spy Hard, I think.
Yeah.
It's actually more like Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's absolutely brilliant, yeah. But imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, is that the phrase? Yeah. But this is what John Barry said initially. He said, no one would know what the word Thunderball meant, so a bit like Moonraker, Octopussy as well, you know, shouldn't say that, so we can't use that. So he actually thought, we don't want a song called Thunderball in because it would make the worst song title of all time. That's what he said. And then he wrote a song called Thunderball. Yeah. and another legendary story is Don Black looked it up in the dictionary and it wasn't there. So that's it. All right. Well, so he strikes like Thunderball.
It's class.
But it works, doesn't it?
It does. It works. It's class. Yeah.
But presumably, Chris, you know, in the novel, like, is the word, how often is it used? And,
I think it's only used once, I think, or a couple of times. It's to do with the nuclear weapons, isn't it? The thunderballs, the explosions. I think it was. But I think the cover version, the Martin Fry one from, I think that's really good as well. I think Martin Fry from ABC.
The Shaking Not Stirred.
Yeah, it can really hold that note. Pretty decent cover. I don't know if there are any other cover versions.
I've mentioned this compilation before. It's the most unknown compilation ever. 2017, it was an official tribute album, but I think I've only found it online. One of the worst names ever. Songs, Bond Songs.
Oh, yeah.
Music from 007, yeah. We had one for the, I think we used it for the License to Kill version. And there's one for World Is Not Enough by the singer from Fountains of Wayne. Jarrett Reddick from the band Bowling for Soup.
Brilliant.
Are they your era?
Yeah, I mean, I only know that song that. Oh, wait. Was it Bowling
Bigger
for
in
Soup?
America than England type.
Was it Bowling for Soup or Puddle of Mud who wrote that song that had like a record number of F words in it?
No, yeah, that it wasn't these guys, I think. Yeah.
Oh, Puddle of Mud. That's Super Furry Animals, wasn't it?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, it they're all the same, aren't they? They're all these.
Yeah.
Mocha sort of band. Punk. Yeah. It's not classic John Barry, is it? Really? Come on.
He gave it his blessing. No. So yeah, there's been the odd cover, but again, like we said, it's not. It doesn't seem to be in that pantheon of the most famous ones.
No.
I think when it's on, if you're watching the film, I think most people go, oh yeah, I know this one. He actually performed it for Sean Connery when Sean Connery got the American Film Institute Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006. So there is a version of Tom Jones singing it. I mean, his voice is, again, it's just a joke, isn't it? His voice is incredible. Mm. And I love doing impressions of Tom Jones around the house all day, every day. It's one of the nicest voices to sing. It's so exaggerated and over the top.
It's very The Trip as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. why?
Yeah. Brilliant.
He's a really, really funny guy, isn't he? And, he had to do a Bond song, didn't he? He's British. He's got an epic voice. And he was popular at the time. So, yeah, I'm glad he did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I
I sometimes forget myself that he's done one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this guy who's, you know, still famous now. And yeah, you know, compared to other people who I think of, you know, who are like synonymous with Bond and having done Bond songs, I don't always think of Tom Jones. Very underrated.
It's a bit like Madonna, because obviously,
well, yeah.
Obviously she's done hundreds of songs you don't really associate. Not because of the song itself, John. We're not saying we don't like the song.
Thunderborn, Dying of the Day don't necessarily sit handy.
Yeah.
Do you like that one, Griff? Dying of the Day?
No, I do not.
But the song,
I listen to
like,
all the Bond songs. Yeah. I do skip on Dying of the Day, and I do skip on whatever that Quantum of Solace rubbish.
Another Way to Die.
I can't listen to that.
Brilliant.
I mean, it's interesting you say that about Tom Jones, Matt, because like when I got into pop music was the same time that I got into Bond. So it was like that same era. I remember, this is so, so sad, but I remember that the first ever contemporary music CD I bought was Now That's What I Call Music 45. And the next one I got was Now That's What I Call Music 46. And Tom Jones was on both of them. There was on 45, it was Mama Told Me Not to Come with a stereophonic.
Yeah, yeah.
And then.
Sex Bomb?
Oh. And number 46 was Sex Bomb. When I got into Bond, and I didn't know either. And I'm like, I can't believe that Sex Bomb guy is singing a James Bond song like 40 years.
That's classic before. Tom Jones. Yeah. He's like a dance artist. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he did that. Stoned
it's so offensive, isn't it? That's the Sex Bomb guy.
Yeah.
Another extremely sad bit of trivia that I've found about Tom Jones, he parodied the song. It's a different song for an animated cartoon, a Warner Brothers cartoon in the 2000s, starring Daffy Duck, called Duck Dodgers. And he did the theme to this, yeah? And it was like a Bond spoof song. So I'm hoping everybody is frantically looking this up. And that sounds like the most uncool thing you've ever heard of, but it was a collaboration with one of the coolest, in inverted commas, bands ever, the Flaming Lips. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what's that doing in history? What is going on in this world? Who put these people together for an animated? What's going on? What is going on? But yeah, you can hear it. It's only about a minute long.
What a guy.
Yeah, what a legend. What an absolute legend.
If you're enjoying Really 007, why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram? Look us up at Really 007 Pod.
We will move on now to the third song we're going to talk about tonight, which is one, I think, well, it's from a game, first of all. And with Sam Rogers, we talked about a couple of the songs from the games, Everything or Nothing and Nightfire. But tonight, a really forgotten Bond game. And I feel bad that I certainly didn't give it any. I don't know if I've ever played it. I don't think I have. And it's an original Bond adventure game from 2010.
So it's, yeah.
Okay, so it is over a decade old, but it's relatively one of the newer games because obviously they're not getting made much now, are they? But Bloodstone is the game. Two words. Normally you'd think for Bond they combine them like Thunderball, don't you? But anyway. Yeah, and it was on Nintendo DS, Windows, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360. It was the first game since Everything or Nothing, which you talked about, to have an original story. And again, it was written by Bruce Feirstein, who started with writing the GoldenEye film, of course. And he did co-write or provide story credits for Tomorrow Never Dies and World Is Not Enough as well. So this guy was the main Bond writer of the 90s and the 2000s. So it was it's superb, yeah. And it was the first and only, I think, standalone Daniel Craig Bond game. It's good, isn't it, for his legacy? Effectively, he's done six. You know, a bit like Sam Rogers was saying to us, it was quite growing up with Brosnan, particularly the games. You had 2002 Dying of the Day, but because Everything or Nothing was 2004, it almost felt that was the continuation of, you know, the in-between the Brosnan and Craig eras, and that really helped. And I think going forward, it's another thing they could bring back.
Yeah, I feel bad and really annoyed with myself about this, that I just wasn't that interested. Maybe it was because, you know, truth being told, I did have, and still a few, but less, kind of problems with the era. And maybe, I don't know, but I still can't believe we didn't get it. And I really think, we should get it. Tom, you've got a PlayStation 3. I'd love to.
Yeah, I should get it.
I'd love to play it. I love the idea of doing game versions of the films, you know, so like GoldenEye, Tomorrow Dies, World Is Not Enough, etc. But then to do separate adventure games, which is like a new story and with a song and everything. I really like that. I really like the ambition of that, to be honest with you. And I'm so frustrated that we never got it and never played it.
Like you say, it keeps Bond in the fore of popular culture. That it's still, it doesn't just disappear off the map for 5 years and then suddenly there's a new Bond film. You know, I think it keeps it.
Yeah, and amongst a demographic that, you know, even nowadays, I assume kids seem to play games. You know, what's that one that they're always obsessed with?
Fortnite,
yeah. So they are still playing them, and I think that would be a really good, because I'd never want Bond to be the cinematic universe or anything like that, but a game is a really good way to reach that audience.
Yeah, and look what GoldenEye on N64 did for Bond, as well as gaming as well. That was
Right. There's one scheduled for next year?
I think so, yeah.
What do we know about it?
I don't know if there's anything.
Is it original? Yeah, it's not original. A No Time to Die.
It's an original.
Is it?
No, it's an original. It's an original.
Yeah, decent sort of company who are making it, by all accounts. You know, a reputable games software company. So, yeah. But again, we don't know whether it'll be who will be bonding it. I don't even know whether they've got to that stage or anything yet. But is anything in the pipeline is always exciting for me.
Have any of you guys played Bloodstone then?
I don't think they heavily advertised it.
No.
Which is probably the reason why I didn't know it existed, if I'm honest.
No.
And I'm quite an avid gamer, lover of Bond and obviously GoldenEye. I don't think it was heavily advertised or promoted.
No, it wasn't, no.
I'm sure it was.
Is it after Quantum of Solace then?
Yeah. 2010, so in between that and Skyfall, yeah.
Shamefully never played it even. I don't know why, because I absolutely love Everything and Nothing and all the rest of it. And actually, what a great title for a Bond film as well. I think it's great. It's original. I can't see why I wouldn't have played it. And I looked online today, and a lot of people praised it and said it was a really good game. I think it was certainly rated a lot better than, 007 Legends a couple of years later.
Yeah, well, it's because we got the From Russia with Love game, and I thought, oh my word, this is the start of something amazing. I know Matthew said it's great to have new games. I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm not saying at the expense. Yeah. I mean, I'd love it all, but it's just...
But I was imagining then, right, we're going to have a... Well, I don't know why they didn't start with Dr. No, but anyway.
Yeah.
But if we had a game for each of the films leading up to GoldenEye, you know, it'd be absolutely amazing, God, wouldn't it? It's got to be done. Surely.
Well, with the greatest respect, a man with a golden gun computer game would be pretty boring. he kills one person in the whole film.
Yes.
So learn all the martial art moves.
You could inexplicably enter some martial arts tournament.
I can drive through Bangkok with Sherry JW. Actually, that sounds pretty good.
You like the Die Hard with the Vengeance game, wouldn't it? even though they had no promotion, so it had Daniel Craig's voice, Judi Dench as M, Rory Kinnear as Bill Tanner, and the poster boy for No Time to Die, of course. But the song, anyway, the song was by Joss Stone and not called Bloodstone, called I'll Take It All, and I think it was written for the game, you know. So there's obviously a lot of money's gone into the game, and Joss Stone was also in the film, so a bit like Maya. Sorry, in the game, a bit like Maya in Everything or Nothing, playing MI6 agent Nicole Hunter. Basic name, not very Bond name. Stone co-wrote the song with, you know, this is incredible, another massive name in music.
Fountains of Wayne.
No. It's like someone, I don't know who, in their old band could have done a Bond song, but now they're writing a Bond. Dave Stewart from Eurythmics.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah.
Who's wow. that girl, of course, sounds like a... Well,
yeah,
sounds
yeah.
a bit like a Bond.
They could have done a Bond song, but I mean...
Yeah.
Annie Lennox is very underrated. I think she'd have made a great Bond singer. Mm. And co-star in a video game.
Who's this beautiful blonde man with a lovely singing voice? Yeah. It's Annie Lennox.
Yeah. That was the Police. Yeah. Or as they're now known, Sting.
Sad, isn't it? Yeah, Griff, I'd not really heard about the song. Maybe heard of the game, but not played it, but didn't even know there was a song for it.
No, first when you put it on the list of what we're chatting about, like, never heard of it. Wasn't anywhere on Spotify. Had to go to YouTube. There was no hype, and I think I would have thought it would hit the charts at the same time as the game came out. It seemed to completely fall under the radar. Joss Stone's quite a big name as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't on the radio or anything, not that I know of. As far as I know, it's the first time I've ever heard it.
Joss Stone on paper is a classic. At the time, she would be quite an obvious choice, wouldn't she, for Bond's song?
But by 2010, by 2010, was she still a big name, or was she a bit less of a name? Because I think more mid sort of, you know, 2003, 2004.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of. Maybe.
Band-Aid 20.
Yeah, yeah.
it's a British soul, big
woman.
Boy, big in America.
It sounds like, I listened to it a couple of...
No, this is what we want to talk about, the song itself.
And the first time I heard it, I was like, what is this?
My initial
reaction was, this sounds like, you know, those Britain's Got Talent, you haven't got the rights to, you know, obviously she's got a good voice, you haven't got rights to like an official Bond song, so this is the one that someone writes in half an hour. Yeah, and the production, I don't think is particularly great. It has all the sort of horrible cliches that you think when it comes to Bond song. I really struggled to get through the first listen. I've gone back and listened to it a few more times, and I think actually it was a bit harsh. It's not as bad as I thought it was, but it's not great. The lyrics are very, again, well, I suppose the perfect Daniel Craig. I don't care if I live or if I die.
No, I think, well, I'm going to defend it to an extent, but obviously I will agree, Chris, that the lyrics are just Daniel Craig. It's moody Bond, isn't it? You know, there is definitely that about it. I think for a video game, it's really, really effective.
I would agree. When I put it in the context of it's written for a video game, I think actually I was being a bit harsh.
Not a John Barry song.
No, and going back to our conversation that we've had before, I know you said you'd hate the production, but I actually thought, but it's got Bond brass about it. It's got a Bond feel about it in the production, even if it's not executed that well. Mm. And I actually came out thinking, barring Skyfall, that's possibly the most Bondian feel to a song in the Daniel Craig era. Mm. Not the best, obviously. You Know My Name's the best song, but I'd say what you think of standard Bondian feel, barring Skyfall, I'd say that that's the next of the Daniel Craig era. On paper, Joss Stone should be a really good choice. Her voice is completely drowned out in that song. She's not, when I think of Joss Stone, I think her best vocal is probably Right to Be Wrong, but that's a really laid back soul tune. Stripped back with just a bit of blues guitar going on. This, you have the full band, or all right, you probably had someone in Logic pressing a keyboard and making band sound. But
Dave Stewart.
But it's still the same point. Is that you put a big band in there, and I actually thought her voice didn't carry throughout the song at all. I thought I was quite disappointed by the vocal on it. But I think for what it is, it's a really serviceable song. And it's original, and I think, well, at least someone's put the effort in to do it, and it's all right. I'd give it a pass. I'd actually listen to it again, mate. I'd give it a pass.
Do you like the song, Griff?
I don't like the song. I must admit, you know what? I find the song quite forgettable. I've had to listen to this the most. Even before, like, we came in here, I thought I'd better listen to it again. I wrote it down. I just had the same note about Craig, like, I don't care if I live or die. I don't mind. It just sounds someone's fed up about his job. And it's very repetitive. It's not very... don't get me wrong. I want to like it. And I get, like, your argument about it's made for a video game, but if you ever played Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater, that's how you do a Bond song for a video game, even though it's not a Bond film. I'd love to say I'd like it, but I don't find any of it really catchy. And sorry.
No. Go on, Matt.
Do you want my thoughts? Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, firstly, I was never a massive Joss Stone fan, and I know what you're saying about her possibly being, ideal, but I never saw her as someone who had a really big, powerful voice that would, you know, not like a Shirley Bassey or even Adele or someone like that. She had her own sort of style, and, you know, she won Best Urban Artist despite living in a rural country mansion all her life.
Leafy suburb.
Yeah, yeah.
Devon.
But I don't mind this song. I think one of the problems it has is I don't think a Bond song, I'm trying to think of others if any of them do this, starts with the chorus. You know, you get a bit bored. You know, Griff, you said it was repetitive. I think that might be why you think that it sounds a bit repetitive. But I don't mind it. And like you say, considering it's for a video game, it's, I don't know. I don't think it's that bad. And yeah, I mean, the chances of it coming on the radio or me hearing it in any other context other than finding it on YouTube are very, very small. But, but yeah, I don't mind it. I'm absolutely okay with it.
Do you think it's going to be shortlisted for songs, Bond songs too?
That, it was like the version of that I found of Thunderball. You know, like, it's an official album, like 737 views or something on YouTube. You know what? It's just completely under the radar. But I'll take it all. Did you see the title version of it?
Wait, sorry, just on the views on YouTube.
Oh, go on.
Tom, so our like interview, you know, our little interview. I've got more.
I mean, more never mind. Never mind with Anthony Starr. Our discussion with Madeline Grant's got more
views. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Give the people what they want.
Absolutely. Yeah. First rule of mass media.
So yeah, has anyone seen the title sequence? You know how they do it? They did it with Everything or Nothing. This song on, but you know, it's only like, of course, a short and maybe a minute version of it. The title sequence, did you see it, Griff?
Yeah, with the diamond and the I think it works better visually, because obviously I'm like got it on repeat, like while I'm working, like behind the window. But I think actually when you actually watch the video, it works better. It doesn't make it good still, but it's better.
But did you not think it looked like a cheap version of the Casino Royale title sequence?
Yeah. It's just, I hope it has got something to do with diamonds, because it's very heavily...
Yeah.
Diamonds all over the place. Stone.
That's very, very babyish, a Bond plot to do with diamonds.
It's also very babyish to get Joss Stone to do the song for Blood.
Oh, yeah,
Stone.
I know, yeah.
Think about that, yeah, of course. Bloodstone, that's thinking. Yeah. Josh. Yeah, the joke, wasn't it?
They'll be getting royal blood to do the one for Bloodstone, too.
Very good. Yeah, it would have been up for that. Going forward, lads, in terms of a Bond game, would you? How exciting would that be just to see one? Would you do a song with it as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, I that's what I love. And, you know, this is, you know, I've said this before, one of the things about James Bond films, the series that they have over loads of other series, is that you have this title song that goes with it that's released a few weeks before or obviously in the case of No Time to Die, you know, a few years before, but I think it's, you know, it's something that it needs to, you know, even with a video game, to have a song and to have that title sequence, even if it's, you know, shorter or whatever. Yeah, go for it. Lean into all that. Give people, you know, I said that target demographic of the younger, you know, kids, give them a flavour of what's Bond, even if it's catered to them a bit more. Absolutely. Yeah.
Do it like a Die Hard. You know, a Die Hard had Die Hard trilogy.
Yeah.
But like, just have like all the Bond films. There's a mission in each film. It's obviously fundable, but easy underwater battle.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh. Well, they did do 007 Legends, which was a bit like that, but I must confess I didn't play it. John and Tom played a bit of that, didn't you?
Well, couldn't get past the first Goldfinger level. I've not been able to get that. But it's Daniel Craig as Bond in Goldfinger. And then Honor Majesty's. And then which... Is it Moonraker? Because, of course, Cary Edwards, one of our guests, he's in it. He's in the games as one of the Moonraker scientists. And then the License to Kill, incredibly. Well, I'm obsessed with that. And Dine of the Day was the Pierce Brosnan one chosen.
Invisible Car, was it?
Well, probably because...
he's done all the other games.
Yeah.
And then Skyfall, yeah. Sort of tacked on at the end when... They could have just done a Skyfall game, couldn't they, really? But
like Home Alone.
Yeah. Dear me. Merging the two, yeah.
There'd already been a Dark Knight, though, game, hadn't there, though, so.
Oh.
There was a Batman Begins one, there wasn't a Dark Knight one, but sorry, that's just... Yeah.
All right, I apologise. There's an Arkham Asylum game.
Yeah, there is.
Why wasn't there a Dark Knight game?
What? I don't know. I think they were thinking about it, but they...
The Lord of the Rings, they sort of won and they didn't really build on it, really.
I mean, I apologise. I'll give myself an SGBW. Stop getting Batman wrong.
And, So sad.
Sorry, I'm...
No. Rubbish here. Right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. It's been another brilliant, just great to chat Bond. And we haven't, like you said, we haven't really chatted about Thunderball much. Hmm. Just so refreshing to be in that world of James Bond and thinking about the 60s with John Barry and Sean Connery and just gets you excited, doesn't it? Mm. Just that's what we grew up on, and that's when you sort of really wanted to be Bond, when you're playing, you know, with your brothers and everything. That was just the best times. So I'm glad we've been able to have a chance to talk about that. And the music is just fantastic for that film. And Bloodstone. So yeah. So thank you, guys, and great to have you on, Griff, finally.
Yep.
I know we've been trying to do this.
Yeah, definitely.
Great to have you on here, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me. Like I say, don't meet your heroes. So, yeah, it's all cool. looking forward to this for ages, so, yeah.
Thank you very much
for having me.
Great thank you so much. No, thanks for coming on, pal.
And we'll see you soon, definitely. So thank you, Griff. Yeah. Thank you, everybody else. And, yeah, we'll have more James Bond Songbook episodes. Until we literally have milked the songbook dry, I think. There's plenty more to come. There certainly is. And, yeah, we'll have more episodes soon. So thanks for joining us tonight, and we will see you very soon. Good night.
See you later. Really, Douglas.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.